Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
Yes, you're very welcome along to Alive and Kicking. You can text the show 53106. It'll cost you 30 cents. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire's Lair. Coming up, I'm going to be talking to artist Ciara Rogers about how giving back is amazing for our well-being and why we shouldn't necessarily write off the elderly. And the inimitable force that is Hector O'Hookagon will join me to talk about the power of connecting to the land, and he's encouraging you to feel the burn next... Not next weekend, the weekend after next, the 25th of January. So what kind of health and wellness week did I have? Well, I took part in a health and wellness survey. So over the Christmas break, I got this letter through the door to say that our house was one of 13,720 randomly selected homes to take part in a survey by the Department of Health with the help of Ipsos MRBI. And they were looking to get an up-to-date picture of the nation's health. And it said in the letter that then this information will be used to put policies in place. And it was kind of a bulky letter. So I actually thought it was going to be something I'd have to fill in, and I fully intended to do so, but just threw it in the pile of must get to that sometime, along with the bills and all that other important stuff. But then during the week, while I was sitting on the couch, catching up on Dermot Bannon being his own architect and having a bit of lunch, there was a knock at the door. And you know how it is in modern life. We do not like somebody to ring the doorbell unannounced. But I opened it and there was a man there with a folder. He said, "Did you get the letter? I'm here to do the survey face to face." So that was a bit of a shocker, but I let him in. And I have to say, he was one of the nicest people for something like that, because I don't want to get him in trouble, but he was a talker. So I got lots of anecdotes about his own life. But I think that's important. I think if somebody just came in with the iPad and was all business, it would be a little bit uncomfortable, because it was about 10, 15 minutes at my table over a coffee. So I must say, I really did enjoy his company. And the questions really focused a lot on alcohol intake, I remember. There was a good bit on whether or not I smoked. And obviously, as is the nature with the survey, if you answered no to something, then it wouldn't lead on to many others. And that was kind of how it worked. There was a massive emphasis on mental health, which I thought was a really good development to see, that not only is it discussed more amongst the public, but it's definitely on the agenda of our policymakers when it comes to our health. Questions about maybe my general mood every day, or if I've ever felt blue to the point where I couldn't get out of bed. I mean, it was really quite specific. They focused a lot on where would I go for health advice, and did I know how long antibiotics should be taken for, and did I know the difference between a virus and a bacterial infection. Now, as I don't know the specific focus about the survey, I don't know enough about it. Obviously, I didn't ask the man about it, and I didn't get any more major information than that and then what the letter said. So I don't feel like I'm criticising it, because you literally can't ask everything about health in general. But I thought it was strange that there was nothing about the food that I eat, or that I cook for my family, or how often would I cook, or, you know, does the quality of food matter to me? Do I shop local? There was also no real questions about exercise and getting out in nature, and are we active as a family? So I did think that was strange. But again, I think it was a really positive thing that the survey was happening at all, and there was lots of good stuff there. And my health and wellness tip for this week has come about because I've been minding my 1.5-year-old niece for the weekend while my sister is away. And I think we should all borrow a toddler every now and then. Now, obviously, get the parents' permission. Don't just, you know, take one off the street. That is not a tip that I would recommend to anybody. But just offer. If there's one in your family, offer to take the toddler for an hour or two. It'll put you up in their estimations 1,000,000%, and you will get a lot out of it. So Olivia is staying with us, and even though I have two kids of my own and I still have so many gorgeous moments with them, I need to make that clear. I think I'd forgotten a little bit about the magic of the really small people and how they see the world. So going out for a walk with her yesterday, we're pointing at trees, we're excited about clouds, there was a massive rainbow over our heads. We fed the ducks, and the whole thing was just amazing to her and reminded me to take it all in. And I do think it's important that she isn't mine, so I'm not crazy knackered, as you often are when you've got a 1.5-year-old that's your own and you're kind of thinking about all the housework you had to do, I just took myself out and just enjoyed her. So there you go. That's my health and wellness tip to you. You can text the show 53106 or you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, 100 Days of Walking, the brainchild of Ciara Kelly on Lunchtime Live, is all over my Twitter feed. And I love seeing people out walking. I mean, people are really getting on board with this. They're doing cliff walks, they're walking in the park. And I even saw someone enjoying walking through Dublin city centre after work in the early evening and taking all of that in. And I do think it's a great initiative because just putting your runners on and heading out for 30 minutes a day seems far kinder than some of the things that seem to come in January, like I'm going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and work out and I'm only going to drink green juice until 11 o'clock and all that sort of stuff seems very harsh on the body. And Ciara Kelly is on the phone now. Good morning, Ciara.
Good morning, Claire. How are you?
I'm very good. And I am speaking honestly, it's everywhere. People are really getting on board with 100 Days of Walking.
They honestly are, and so much so that I actually did put up a tweet at one stage going, lads, if you hate it, you can mute the hashtag, and if you don't hate it, jump on board, because I suppose there are, you know, it's not an overstatement, there's thousands of people doing it now, and it's exactly what you said, and that's the beauty of it. It's put on your runners or a pair of comfy shoes and head out the front door. It's very simple. There are very few obstacles to doing it. It's not expensive. You don't need equipment. You don't need, you know, a membership of a gym or anything like that. You don't need money. You don't need anything really like that. It's a low bar that anyone can do. And I think that's one of the beauties of it, that it's a very simple, small change, and it does make a big impact.
Well, I think yesterday was a good one. That was day 11, was it? It's day 12 today. But yesterday it was raining. So you,
yes,
yourself and other people said, look, this is horrible. I don't want to go out. And yet, yes, do it anyway. And I think that's important because we'd amazing weather, I thought, over Christmas. Really kind of crisp but sunny. And it was perfect get out for walk weather. Whereas now we're back to work. It's all gone a bit grey. It was a bit rainy. That was the toughest one, I assume.
Yeah, but it was pretty impressive to get to day 11 before I had to walk in the rain. I mean, that was the first day that it was manky and I went out and I put up a little video saying, you know, here I am doing this. And you could hardly see me because my hood was so big. I was literally looking out of a kind of a tiny hole inside this huge hood because it was very wet. But those days, the days that you go out when you don't want to and when it is a bit miserable, it is a bit rainy, those are the days that are really important because those are the days you are recommitting to yourself that you're doing it. And if you go out on the manky day, you do kind of get an extra lift when you come home because you think, wow, I'm actually doing this. So today is day 12. Oh, I'm a little yawn, sorry. But today is day 12. And in a funny kind of way, I don't really want to go out today. It's probably going to be sunnier today than it was yesterday. But you do have the days when you want to go out less than others. And that's going to be the same for me and for everybody else. But the point is you don't break the chain. That it's very motivating, the 100 days thing. That the fact that there's lots of other people doing it, and the fact that you look, I'll go out today because I went out 11 other days, and I don't want a setback sort of thing. So, it's kind of empowering because it's not that hard to achieve. But you set a goal and you achieve it, and that feels kind of good.
How much of an impact does it have on your health over the 100 days and then at the end of it? I mean, do you see a difference in your body? Do you feel a difference in your mood, in yourself?
Completely. As I say, first of all, the whole aspect of goal setting and achievement. If you set a small goal every day for 100 days and achieve it for 100 days, there's a positive feedback loop there for you. And that's a really good thing. Second of all, in terms of your mood, going out for a walk for 100 days, so 100 days of green exercise, outdoor exercise, is really, really good for us. But it's also, you do get the endorphins, but you've also had the sense of achievement. And, you know, there's different phases of 100 days. At the beginning, you feel all enthused. The middle bit, you're all a bit, oh, God, do I have to? And by the end, you're like, yeah, look, I'm actually doing this and it's nearly done. And so there's all that. There's a lot of good things happen to your mental health from walking, particularly outdoors, the fresh air and all of that. But physically, yes, absolutely. Walking is really, really good for your cardiovascular system, for your respiratory system, for your joints, your bones. It's good to prevent osteoporosis because it's weight-bearing. It's good for your musculature. It has a massive knock-on effect on about six different systems within the body physically. So walking is really, really good. But there is that thing, I don't know if you ever read the book Run, Fat Bitch, Run, but it's a similar idea in that the girl who wrote that, Ruth, she said that she felt because she went out for a run every day and because she set that goal for herself, it had a knock-on effect on the rest of her life because she had said she was going to do this and she did it and it made her feel, I can kind of do other things too. I can do whatever I put my mind to. And she said, in terms of kind of broadening horizons for her life, it was a real positive. And this has a similar effect. So there is an effect. And frankly, I don't like January. I don't like the rain and the dark and the cold and the wet. And I don't really like the beginning of the year. It always feels like it's a bit of an uphill part of the year to me that you're kind of struggling with. And the very act, I guess, of putting one foot in front of the other every day in a positive way helps me, and I think other people, to get through it, so that you kind of feel, no, I'm beating January. I'm getting beyond it, and I'm doing something positive with the start of the year. So yes, it does have an impact, and it's quite big.
Now, can people join at any time, even though it's day 12? If people are listening now and want to get involved, obviously they're welcome. And I don't want to give people ideas, but can you mess around with the 100 days? Can you say, well, I missed Wednesday, so I'll do an hour at the weekend? Or do you recommend you just stick to doing it every day?
I tell you what I do. I walk for half an hour or more every day. There are days when I would walk for 45 minutes. There's days when I would walk for an hour. There's days when I would walk for 2.5 hours, maybe even more. But I don't bank them, all right? So I don't go, oh, 2.5 hours on Sunday, that's me sorted till next Friday. I don't do that, okay? So I definitely hit the half an hour every day. But you are doing this for yourself in the same way I am doing this for myself. So if you miss a day, that is not a reason to stop, right? That's not a reason to go, oh, well, I screwed that now. Do you know what I mean? I walked for 12 days, but I missed one, so I'm not doing any more. That's not a reason to do that. So some people will miss a day, and if they want to do an extra half an hour somewhere and they're happy with that, they can do that. Other people tag a day on to the end and go, you know, I'm only on day whatever, 99 instead of day 100, or you know, so people do it that way. Do it whatever way works for you, because do it anyway is the whole thing. And of course it's day 12 for me, but you can make it day 1 for you if you want and still do 100 days of walking and walk for 12 days beyond where we walk. Or you can join in on day 12 and do double walks here and there and catch up. You can do whatever. There's no sort of, what I'm doing is a half an hour a day, and that feels really good to me, that long-term kind of commitment of 100 days of at least half an hour. But if you have to mess with it a bit sort of fit in with your life, do it. Because get out and walk is the whole thing. Walking is really good for you, and it's really good for your mood, your mental health, your physical health, and lots of other things as well in terms of, as I say, that positive feedback thing. Just do it.
Good stuff. Well, if you want to find out more, go to newstalk.com. Dr. Ciara Kelly, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Claire.
And Ciara will, of course, be back on Lunchtime Live tomorrow. And that's a really good shout, actually. That book, Run, Fat Bitch, Run, is it's very good. It's well worth checking out. So that was a good shout from Ciara. I do recommend that book. Even if you never run after it, you will enjoy the author's journey through it. All right, we'll take a quick break. But coming up, how artist Ciara Rogers engaged with the elderly at a care home in her area.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Ciara Rogers was one of six artists selected by Age and Opportunity to deliver an artist in residence programme at a care home towards the end of last year in Castle Island Daycare Centre in County Kerry. And Ciara found she engaged with the elderly visitors at the centre by starting conversations with them about the history of their local buildings and then by drawing them. And she joins me in studio now. Hello, Ciara.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
Well, what an incredible thing to be a part of. How did you get involved in the first place?
So Age and Opportunity did a call out for artists to get involved in this project. And it was a two-part process where the care centre applied first and then they artists applied then after that. Six of us were chosen and we were kind of dotted around the country in different care centres with varying needs for the attendees. The care centre that I went to in Castle Island had a lot of people over the age of 80, actually. So a few of the challenges that I had to deal with were sight, hearing and mobility. It was challenging to begin with, but my proposal for the project was that we would have a discussion about the historical buildings in their area. And I feel like that was a good way to get in without calling it art, because I think if you go in there calling it drawing or art, you could immediately turn people off. But if you come in and you're like, this is a conversation, this is a creative exchange, what can you tell me and what can we teach each other, was my attitude going into it.
And I think it's one of the areas you hear it from organisations like Alone, who talk about call into the elderly people in your community, start a conversation. And sometimes people say, well, where do I start? Once I've said, how are you and your name, how do you keep it going? Whereas this is brilliant, because the elderly, I noticed that even with my own dad, he's in his 80s, he loves to talk about his past and when he grew up, and all the stories come.
Well, I think they want to be made feel valuable, like, because and you need to make that human connection first. So you need to really, you need to be going in asking them their life story before you want to get involved, get them involved in anything else, because they want to be valued and appreciated just like everybody else. And I think that they're very often, people are afraid of it. People are kind of afraid to approach somebody older just because.
And we assume in many ways that they're going to dismiss our generation as we're going to dismiss their generation.
I think so.
And neither of it's true.
No, none of it is true. And maybe as well that I think coming from a place, when I began the residency, I was nervous that I was going to be patronising for them, because I'm very respectful of older people and I didn't want to come in saying, I'm the teacher, I'm the art teacher, I'm going to show you this, I'm going to show you that. I had to come from a point of, this is a creative exchange, you know, can you tell me a little bit about these buildings and maybe I could show you a little bit of drawing practice.
Brilliant.
While I'm here. Yeah.
Great
yeah.
way to kind of handle the power.
I think so.
In the start.
I'm not coming in as an art teacher. I'm not there to tell them what to do. I'm there to make a connection with them, you know.
And how did they respond?
Some of them responded really well. Like at the beginning, I think I was expecting them to be more confident. They weren't quite as confident as I thought they would be. So I think with the conversations and getting to know them a little bit more, their confidence came out a lot. And some of them hadn't drawn since they were maybe 15, particularly a man, Walter, that I worked with. And he was just became wheelchair bound this time last year. And he was having a hard time with it. He hadn't drawn since he was 15, and now he's drawing every day. He's got a little studio set up in his house. His wife's really supportive of it as well. And that was the thing as well with the residency. You're also involved with the families. You're involved with the care setting staff. It's a whole world of people that you're involved with.
So your premise was that you go in, you show them photographs of local buildings, talk about them, and then get them to draw them eventually.
Well, yeah, it was kind of like that. We also had a field trip out to Harkness Hotel, which would be in the main town. It's quite an imposing Georgian building and it's got a really rich history in regard to the Civil War, the Irish Civil War. And a lot of these people in the care centre, their parents were involved directly with the Civil War. And I think it was interesting because they were sort of taught not to speak about it. Kind of something that they weren't really encouraged to talk about. It was very hush-hush. Maybe their parents didn't want to tell them about it because they were, their children. So getting to know some of the myths and the legends and the true stories of these buildings was just fascinating for me, for my own artistic practice. So in a way, it was to benefit those elderly people, but also to benefit my art practice.
And once you broke down the initial barrier at the beginning, was it hard to keep these people quiet? Did the conversation flow?
It did. It really did. Like everybody had something else to give to the story, especially if they were very local. So like it was the daycare centre is a catchment centre for like all different areas dotted around in the Slough of Lucra. It's called, it's kind of the valley. And so there's different towns and they're all coming in different days of the week. So that was a bit of a challenge too. I had a different group every day
Okay.
As well.
Okay.
So trying to get some continuity, but it worked. It worked. You know.
You weren't necessarily building relationships with a small group.
I did actually. It naturally whittled down to a small group. So there might have been a big group to begin with, and it naturally whittled down to maybe 5 per day.
Okay.
So I'd have had 15 core participants through the project. Yeah.
Because art can be very much a therapy for people of all ages, can't it?
Yeah, it can. It can. I would definitely encourage people to get in touch with their creative side. Definitely makes life more hopeful. Research has shown that people who participate in shared creative experiences are more likely to be happier and more socially engaged.
Because it's interesting, that's what they say as we come into adulthood, we forget some of the things from our childhood, which are actually so important for our own well-being, like just playing, just being present in the
moment.
Exploring,
yeah.
Just exploring and being open to things and drawing, just sitting and colouring, and who cares if it's good,
who cares if it's bad. Who's going to see it?
Just assuming it's brilliant. That's what you do as a kid.
Yeah, 90% of my drawings or my photography, nobody's going to see it. Like, it's only that 10% that gets put into an exhibition or into a book or on a website, you know. It's only 10%. So if you think of it that way, then we're all free to explore a creative site because nobody has to see it.
And you if know? You are advising people on where to begin, what do you say? I mean, is it as simple as a piece of paper and a pencil?
I would recommend checking out your local galleries. I'm based in Cork, so I run workshops with the Glucksmann Gallery, and they've lots of outreach programs as well with the Glucksmann Gallery in UCC. They very often would have active senior clubs, so art clubs for seniors, and they're very reasonable. You know, they work out as maybe €10 per 2-hour session. I would definitely recommend checking those out. And if not, if you just want to do it at home, I think YouTube tutorials are great. YouTube, you can get a sketchbook, some charcoal. Charcoal's a lovely medium as well, because even if you make a mistake and you smudge it, it kind of tends to look nice. Whereas graphite is a bit harsher. It's a bit, you know, when you just have a line, it's kind of hard to...
Yeah, erase it completely, whereas you can smudge it and feel even more arty.
Yeah, you can make it like, you can turn it 3D with just a smudge and then trying to create a whole object with a pencil.
Yeah, it's amazing advice. So at what point did you move from working just as an artist to wanting to be involved in the social community in your area?
I think it looked like a great opportunity to develop my practice, because a lot of the information about these older buildings, particularly if they're over 100 years old, it's not available on the internet. It might be available in libraries, but I wouldn't know where to look. Like, where would I look to find out about a building in a rural town in Kerry? Where would I begin?
Yeah.
But asking locals is where I've, throughout my own artistic practice, and it's mainly architecture I deal with, it's always been local knowledge that's helped me to figure out what I'm doing around a project.
Right. So who better...
Than
the people who grew up in that
history. Yeah, and sometimes the myths and legends are really interesting as well. One of the houses that I looked at was Kilmurry House. So it wasn't far from the daycare centre, maybe about 5 kilometres. And there was a myth that the stolen Irish crown jewels from Dublin Castle were buried there between Kilmurry Castle and Kilmurry House. So I found that really interesting. I was fascinated. I was like, oh, I should go down with my shovel now and start picking spots.
But that's another day out.
That's another day. It's another project, I think. Yeah.
And did you find, because I think we often just sign off the elderly that they don't have anything to contribute, or it's our own worries about being elderly ourselves that we don't really want to look at what that looks like.
I totally understand that fear, though. And actually working with the elderly had the opposite effect for me. I ended up being comforted by it. Like, so when I went into the residency, I didn't have, you know, I hate to say burden, but I didn't have the burden of care. I mean, the staff were great. They looked after the people. I didn't have to worry about anything like that. So I could just make a pure human connection with them.
Yes.
And it might not just be drawing. I could be sitting down for an hour and a half finding out somebody's life story. And some of these life stories were just like fascinating. People in their 90s, it's really inspirational to speak to somebody in their 90s who can remember, you know, events from the 1940s. It's just fascinating.
Amazing. I can
it's
hardly
amazing.
Remember what I did last Friday.
Yeah.
But I do think it's really important, and I do think it's a barrier we want to overcome, because
I think so.
We are an aging population, and
we're
they are valuable. They have something to offer.
Yeah.
And what about you personally then? How did you feel giving back in that way? What did you get out of the experience? Because even the most successful people in the world say, I didn't have satisfaction in my life until I started to give back, either through volunteering or philanthropy or charitable work. That until you have an element of that in your life, until you know it and the buzz you get from it,
yeah,
you have to do it.
It's very satisfying. It gives me scope for the future in, you know, applying for grants, things like that, because that is an artist's life now. You're writing proposals a lot of the time. But I think that if I could connect with another group, I'd be more confident going forward now in approaching a group or approaching a centre or something like that to engage with my project. And I think that this project, dealing with the buildings, dealing with the history, I think it's kind of transferable in that you could move it to another place and it could be just as successful.
Brilliant. So you're going to do more?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. It's worked out well for me so far. So,
and looking ahead to the future, because I think, you know, daycare centres, nursing homes, it's a place we sort of dread, that we never want to be wheeled in there and left there. But you said you felt quite encouraged and comforted by who you met and what you saw.
But maybe then, maybe I'd feel more comforted. Maybe I feel comforted knowing that somebody like me would go in and kind of engage with them, and I'd hope that it would happen more in the future. And Age and Opportunity are planning on rolling out more artist residencies too. So there were 6 this year, but who knows, in future there could be a lot more. I think it's a relatively new field. Like, residencies have been around a long time, but in a care centre, that's a relatively new area.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to expand. Yeah.
Brilliant. And where can people see your work?
So KiraRogers.com. I'm also Kira A. Rogers on Instagram if you want to check out my stories too.
Brilliant stuff. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure
to
meet
you.
Keep up the fantastic work, because I think there's a lot for people to learn from you. Thank you very much, Kira.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks.
And there's something to learn here from this text from Kira. And you can text the show 53106. It'll cost you 30 cents. Or you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. But what Kira has to say is, I work at Age and Opportunity, and we tend not to use the term elderly. We talk about older people, as we are all older and younger than someone else. And I think that's a really good way of looking at it. And it's something I'm certainly going to take on board, because you're right. When you say the elderly, it just conjures up all these pictures, and it's like we're putting them in a box. And that's maybe what the problem is, whereas it's just somebody who's older. That's really all it is. And I spoke to Kira Kelly earlier about 100 days of walking. And Jessica says, I am doing it and it's great. I'm 12 days in and I can feel the benefits already. Well, good to you, Jessica. Good for you and to anyone else who is doing it. Going to take another break now. But after that, going to speak to the fireball of energy that is Hector O'Hookagon. And he has a challenge for you.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
And you can text the show 53106. It'll cost you 30 cents, or email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. In relation to our discussion with Kira Rogers, the artist who went into care homes to speak with the elderly, we've had a texter say, I visit the elderly with my dog and it's humbling and very rewarding. And we had a text from Kira saying we should repackage the elderly and just say older people. And I think that's a very good lesson to learn. But now, my next guest is literally one of my most favourite people. We worked together in radio together a couple of years ago, and his energy would lift you from any depth. He is magic with people and a brilliant storyteller. And I can tell you that what you see on the screen or hear on the airwaves with Hector O'Hookagon is exactly how the man is off air. And he is bringing that spirit to the Burren on the 25th of January. And he wants you to join him. He is on the phone now. Good morning, Hector.
That's a very nice introduction for a Sunday morning.
I know. Are you crying? Are there tears in your eyes?
Well, there's a sun. There's a lovely bit of west of Ireland sunshine here coming out. And it's a nice morning. No wind, no rain, blue skies. And an introduction like that, it's worth getting up in the morning for.
It's going to be a good day. And we used to work together on a Sunday afternoon. And much as we both love radio, we were kind of ripped from the bosom of our families on a Sunday afternoon. And yet, it was your energy. You'd be up dancing and talking
to
people.
Claire.
Yeah. So, yes, I do always think back with absolute fondness.
We had good fun on that show.
We did. We had really, really good times. So tell me about Feel the Burn and how this whole thing came about.
Yeah, to cut a long story short, about 12 months ago, it was January last year, I went to a new gym, which is a reconverted farmhouse, farm and sheds that have been, it's about 4 miles from where I live. I knew the guy, called Tom French, who was doing it.
So what's it like? I mean, I'm picturing bales of hay and dumbbells beside it.
It's a massive cow shed that's been, I think it was a milking parlour that's been redone, like a very Spartan type gym called Fit Farm. And I knew Tom French from around Galway in the fitness and health circles. I knew he was good. I knew he'd done S&C, or that word that's all cool with teams, strength and conditioning with Galway and other soccer teams. He's at Sligo Rovers now. So I knew of him, and I admired him in soccer years ago. But I went training with him last January. We started talking. We shared a love for Who Dares Wins on Channel 4, the SAS show. Roscoe, my cameraman, is one of the main cameramen on. And Roscoe, who travels the world with me, we started talking more. And then he told me that he went for the toughest, which was the Irish Ranger reality show that has been on RTE, and that he's just got refused from that, even though he beat most people in the fitness part of it. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I beat people on the assisted pull-ups, everything. I won most of the tasks. But because I had in the backstory, they didn't want me in. There was no drama. So anyway, we were talking like that for about 3 weeks. We discussed stuff like Tough Mother and Hell and Back and these brilliant stuff, things that are happening around the country. And he said, I'd love to do something down here. And the conversation continued through February. And then by the end of February, we said, right, let's do something unique. I mean, Connemara and the Burren. I just said it like that. He went away, and about April of this year, we found a magnificent 400-acre farm on the Burren. It's as if the farm has been planted onto the top of the mountain. Amazing family down there, the McCormick family, Frank and Mary. They're two hippies. Frank cuts natural stone. He's been cutting limestone on the Burren for over 30 years. He's an amazing craftsman, amazing stonemason. And now we are ready to launch Field of Burren, which is a 10K multi-obstacle course in one of the most spectacular bits of land the country has to offer.
And in the pictures, I see there's a dolmen there. So did that stone worker make that, or did you make it specifically already, and I just don't know about it?
The dolmen is a famous dolmen on the far side, but we've erected our own limestone dolmen cut by Frank, and that's on top of the hill, Bulleven Hill. The hill is absolutely incredible, which comes in at about 8K. And when you climb it, really fit people can jog it, but I walk it and then take it in, and then I walk a bit more and take it in. But when you get to the top, to signify you're at the top of the Burren, and you're going to look out over Galway Bay, and you're looking out over Clare and Galway, you're going to ring the bell and then come back down for your last 2 kilometres, which is downhill. They call it the lowlands of the Burren, and we've a part of the race, which is in the highlands. But to signify you're on the top point of the race, you will ring that bell at the dolmen. It's 3.5 metres wide, 3.5 metres tall, 2.5 metres wide. Ring that bell, and on your way down, it's the challenge. It's that feeling that you've achieved and got to the top of the hill, the hardest part of the race.
It's quite primal, really, isn't it? Getting to the top of the hill and ringing a bell.
Yeah, well, I suppose, Claire, it is. Listen, the Burren, everyone I've told, I said, is that the Burren? Oh, yeah, the Burren. I've never been down at the Burren. Oh, right, yeah, I've heard. No, there were people staying with us from America. They went to the Burren. It's almost as if we think the Burren is for tourists, in a way. And I'm married to a girl from County Clare, and I don't know the Burren really well. It's an unbelievable rock, 250 square kilometres of a lump of limestone rock that's been there for millions of years, and it really is a special place. So the whole vibe on this, we've cut the stone posts and the gateways, and everything is made in a Celtic-y stonework form, so that we're not using too much plastics either. We're not using too much signage. We want people to get back and realise that people were on this Burren many, many years before us. The land is very special. It's an amazing part of the world. And when you're on top of the hill, nobody needs to plug into Wi-Fi. Nobody needs to be looking for their mobile, because Mother Nature is giving us the best Wi-Fi in the world. And I want people to feel what they're running on, enjoy what their eyes are looking at as you travel through Silver Forest, Birch Forest or Hazel Forest, or you're coming along Turlocks or Drumlins and rolling pasture land, and in the distance you can see the hill. So to get back to nature and get back to the land, I think the difference, that's what we're trying to achieve here, that, you know, there's so much going on Monday to Friday, but yet there's so many people getting fit and are fit and are looking for these challenges. The take-up has been amazing, and I just can't wait to meet this varied group of people who are going to come down for ICE, which is our first race. And we want to signify the four seasons of the year and the four changing landscapes of the Burren. So ice is the first race, then we'll have water in April, then we'll have sun in high July, and then we'll have fire. So it is pagan, it is Celtic-y, because there were a lot of people enjoying this country of ours long, long before we all arrived in our generation.
Because that's where you describe it on the website, that it's a new type of pilgrimage, because the whole area of the Burren and the Dolmen that's there was a part of a spiritual pilgrimage. And that element of it is really important to you, like connecting with nature that you spoke about and going on that spiritual journey of self-care.
Yeah, I suppose I'm living in the west of Ireland. I was reared in Navan. My mum was from Galway. I couldn't wait to get down here. That was the social side of me years ago, but there's something in the west of Ireland, and I know people love the west of Ireland. When they say they're going to Galway for the weekend, you do get a great buzz, and people enjoy coming to the west of Ireland. Now, there is a lot of rain, and it's sideways rain, but it's soft rain. It's not bad rain, but when it's beautiful, it's spectacular. And from the Burren to Cuttamara and all the way up, you know, all along the Wild Atlantic Way, look how big a success the Wild Atlantic Way has become globally for tourism. It's become one of the biggest global tourism successes in the last 10 or 15 years. So there's a lot to see down here. There's a lot to do. But to do a 10K in a spectacular... Now, I know there's other 10Ks happening all over the country, and they're brilliant. But I just think this is a special part of the world. It's been there for millions of years. I want people to stand around after it. We're going to have fires and hot bowls of soup, and we want to reconnect with conversation. And I want people to just enjoy the experience that it was a little bit different, a different 10K, and we want all levels of fitness to come down to it. It's just a very special place. We've created a lovely run with loads of changing landscapes, and it'll be an achievement to get to the top of the hill, Claire. When you ring the bell, Claire, on the top of that hill and say, "Did you feel the Burren?"
Now, Jonathan says, "Sign me up. Hector could motivate anyone to do anything." But how fit does somebody need to be? Can literally
anyone
do it?
Well, I'm not fit enough to do it. I'm fit a bit. The 10K, I could probably do it my own time. There's nobody taking timings. There's no competitiveness in this race. Of course, there will be people coming to this race who will go off and blitz it, and they're the ones who do it all the time. They're the ones who run down the side of Kirkpatrick, and we accept all levels of fitness. But there's a great cross-section of people coming. There's teams of threes and fives and sevens and minibus loads. I just got eight girls from Limerick yesterday said they're coming up on a bus for making a day out of it, and then they're going on to Galway. That's what we want. All levels of fitness. I don't care if it takes you 3 hours or 2 hours, but what I do want is people to enjoy it, appreciate it. It's called ice. It's in a beautiful part of the world, and I cannot recommend standing on the top of this hill and ringing the bell and seeing and appreciating Mother Nature, but then to come down and have a bowl of soup, stand around a fire, and let's reconnect again about what we're after doing. So we're excited about it, Claire. It's the first race. Hopefully the course looks good, and it's beautiful. It's natural. We've done nothing to it. We've put the Dolmen on the top of this land, and it's a real pinnacle. And it'd be nice to say goodbye to January and welcome the rest of the year. And I'm excited about this as well. It's just something different. I'm always looking for different things to do, and I'm excited about this because it's in a really, really special, sacred part of our country that everybody deserves to see.
And I think there's so much talk now about fitness and getting healthy, and all that's very positive, but there's so many different options out there, and they all have their place, the CrossFits, the gyms, whatever other thing is there. But I think we have forgotten about just getting out in nature, close to where we live. And that's so important and so powerful.
Absolutely. I think we see more nature on our phones now than we do anywhere else, don't we? Because we live in, and I'm bad on the phone, but like when you see koala bears grabbing people's hands, saying thank you for giving me a bottle of water, we're in a really bad place at the moment with nature around the world. The tragedy that's happening in Australia is just, it's catastrophic. Who would have ever thought they'd see those images with koala bears? And it's just, look, we are where we are. We're living in a world of extremes, extreme poverty, extreme migration, extreme politics. We've got your man on one side and your man on the other side, and we're stuck in the middle. I think it's time, and we are doing it. We're minding each other. When I rang a couple of, the last week or two, athletics clubs, running clubs are ringing me, and they're asking about Field of Burren. And that's isn't that an incredible thing? Small little parishes who've got their own running club. All those aren't brilliant runners. They're just people who like getting out and doing 2K, 5K, 10K, 30K. Now, there's people who love their marathons as well, but people who go out and just do their 2K jog. I'm not big into jogging or running, but I'll tell you, I'm excited about this type of a journey because it's going to get us outside. It's not running along a traditional road. You're not coming to crossroads. You're on a lovely bit of land, and it's there for you to enjoy. But as you said, it's really, really important for people. I think Ireland is getting fitter. I think there's so much stuff happening out there, and I hope Field of Burn will become an event on the calendar for a good few years to come.
Amazing. Well, you can check out more, fieldofburn.ie, and registration closes on the 17th, which is this Friday. So tell me a bit about you then and your health and wellness. Aside from this going on, you're doing a massive amount of travel for your travel shows on TG Cahir.
Yes. Yeah. Not so much last year when we went to America for 3 months. We started in Atlanta and Georgia, and we travelled the whole way across to California. I think I put up 5 or 6 kilos in America, Claire, with Wendy's Burgers and Miller Lights. That was a treat every night when we got to a motel in the middle of nowhere. But I try and train as much as I can. I got a bit lazy the 3 months before Christmas. Everyone gets lazy and they say, do I really need to go? And work is a lot to do with it. When you're busy, people don't have the time to do it. And then you get on the couch and then you get started saying, I've done it. But I try and train as much as I can. I was training yesterday. I did circuits in the gym where I had about 10 different stations and blitz that. I can't hardly walk down the stairs this morning, but I like that feeling. Mm. I like the feeling of being sore. I got big into the gym there about 10 years ago, and I started going 3 days a week for about 10 years solid. And eventually you do start seeing biceps, and you start seeing your lats, and you start seeing different muscles. And so I do try and keep as healthy as I can, and the diet is important as well. And we've two teenage boys, 15 and 16, so they're eating us out of house and home, but we're trying to cook as good food for them because they play a lot of sport. And yesterday we tried to do a massive burrito protein thing and a burrito bowl, and it went down well, certain bits of it. But we're always trying to, in our house, Claire, we're always trying to come up with new menus, new food, because we seem to be cooking the same thing every week, week in, week out.
Stop, it's the same in every single house. And listen, it's far from a burrito bowl you were raised, let's be fair.
Yeah, but this is where we decided to try to cook two new dishes a week. And I go into the supermarket, I end up buying the same stuff. We'll have bacon and cabbage on Monday with that glaze, yeah. Then we'll have this, and we'll have sweet and sour chicken on Thursday. I don't know if your brain is trained when you go into the supermarket. You always end up coming out with the same bloody stuff.
Yeah, I have it on my Instagram. Same five dinners. Can't seem to break out of that, and I do my best. Talk to me about the States then, because didn't you go to classes that were being offered by the government for free, boot camps in the morning, to try and tackle obesity over there?
This is in Montgomery, in the capital of Mississippi, where the government has funded all boot camps in the morning, where all across the state, for all workers, they are free boot camps from 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock in the morning, all over the state of Mississippi, because Mississippi is the most obese state in America. Hands down, the most obese state in America. And when I say obese, it's pretty bad over there. And I think they've realized that Mississippi are leading the way. I went to this boot camp, and I saw there was about 150 people, and they were pretty big sizes as well, and normal as well, but just people whose diet are completely skew-ways. America is a takeaway fast food nation. I mean, you're on the interstate in America, and we drove 5,000 miles through Texas and Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and there's really nothing for 50, 60 kilometers, 80 kilometers, excuse me, and then all of a sudden, you'll see the lights of Burger King, you'll see the lights of Taco Bell, you'll see the lights of Lobster Shack, and there will be a village in the middle of nowhere with drive-thrus and a couple of motels peppered around that, and that's where people stay. So when you get off the interstate, you've 3 or 4 hours done and you've another 6 hours to go, you don't have time to be worrying about what you're going to eat. You're just going to eat something really quick, and that's why America has a big problem with that. It's cheap. You can feed a family in Taco Bell. You can bring the four kids in and feed them for $10 or $12. Yeah. So it's got a big problem. But the boot camp in Mississippi was very interesting because it's paid for by the government. And while I was there, the senator of Mississippi was in doing a workout. So they've decided to take the bull by the horns and offer it to the people of the state.
But as you say, until they sort out the food, it's not really going to make an impact. And I say it when I travel anywhere in the world, we are spoiled with the quality of food we eat here. Hector,
eggs.
I'm going to have to...
It's
crazy. Just a simple tuna wrap or a salad when you pull into a garage
doesn't
happen.
That. You can't find a delicatessen, you know.
We're spoiled. Hector, I'm sorry.
We are really spoiled.
We're out of time, but I could talk to you all day. And I want people to join you on Feel the Burn because I think the vibe is amazing. Go to feeltheburn.ie to find out more. Hector O'Hookagon, I love you. I still can't spell your second name without help, but thank you very much for coming on.
See you on the top of the hill to ring the bell. Thanks, girl.
Thank you very much for listening today to Alive and Kicking. My thanks to my producer, John the Burn Fardy, and Peter Malloy was on sound.